Hey, Andrew here, and would appreciate your help with something before we dive in. We are hiring a researcher slash writer, technical writer for e-commerce fuel, specifically to help us go into the forums, take all of the different threads on different things, and bring a lot of the information together in a value-packed, concise guides for our members. So if you know someone who's a great researcher who loves diving deep on e-commerce topics, business topics, and also is a reasonable writer as well, maybe that's you. I would love to connect. And you can learn more about the position, the whole job description, and apply for it at ecommercefuel.com/research. The E-Commerce Fuel podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io, the ERP built natively for e-commerce sellers. Fulfill streamlines the complexity in your business to save you time and money. From smart order routing to warehouse management, accounting to inventory tracking, they take all of your complexity and all the things that take a lot of time and manual effort and streamline them under one unified tool. Their clients range from seven-figure brands all the way through companies doing hundreds of millions of dollars per year so they can grow and scale with you. And they're the highest rated ERP in our community of private sellers, according to member reviews, scoring higher than Odoo, Skubana, Brightpearl, and yes, even NetSuite. Actually scored quite a bit higher than NetSuite. So if you want to streamline the complexity in your business, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the largest and most popular upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 Shopify Plus stores. Man, it is hard to get people to your store these days, whether you're doing organic or whether you're trying to get down in the muck that is Facebook ads these days with the disaster that has become. You want to take advantage when people actually show up. And if you give people a chance, 1 in 6 will spend more money with you if you send them a personalized, targeted, relevant upsell offer, which is what OneClick Upsell makes it super easy to do. You can do it pre-purchase, post-purchase, give them lots of different options. It makes it incredibly easy, and they've helped store owners generate over $200 million in additional revenue. So if you want a slice of that, and you want to get started, you can get started really quickly with them in just a few minutes, get your first upsell up and running, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, it's been a while, but joined by Mr. Bill D'Alessandro, longtime friend and, you know, probably number one co-host in the past. But Bill, how long has it been since you've been on?
It's been probably 6 months, I think. Dang. But you've been having much cooler people than me lately.
Yeah, right. I just pretty much, if, you know, I think what my calculus was is if I have you on too much more, the listeners are going to demand a coup and a co-host change, and I'm going to be out on the street. It was probably more like...
That's right. I'll interview you every 6 months then after that.
Yeah. Actually, that could work really well.
You're in for that.
Today, we're going to talk about kind of a little last minute topic change or something that popped up, but we're going to be talking about Amazon. So talking about the future of Amazon, if brands are going to be going there, if they're going to be fleeing there, kind of what the future of Amazon looks like, if people should be thinking about it, you know, here kind of late circa 2022, and all the good stuff that goes around with that. And the catalyst for this was Bill, you and I have always kind of had differing views on Amazon, which we're going to get into today. But kind of the catalyst for this conversation was I threw out a tweet on Twitter, kind of a tweet thread. So the three big points were kind of a high-level thesis that in the next few years, we're going to see a meaningful decline in the number of brands selling on Amazon because A, consumer behavior is shifting, off Amazon brands are performing better, and that people are already starting to leave. And so, Bill, I think maybe we can kick this off. I'll kind of dive into each one of those real quickly, and then maybe you can jump in with why you think I was off base on some of these.
Yeah. So Andrew, so just to set the stage, like if you're listening, right? Andrew does the State of the Merchant Report every year, which is awesome. And he has some takeaways, and he puts out a pretty spicy tweet thread on, you know, Amazon is dying. We're going to see merchants leaving Amazon in droves, etc. Pretty spicy, and got savaged. And I, out of respect for my good friend Andrew, did not chime in, but instead sent him an email and said, "Let me savage you live on the podcast." So here we are.
Yeah, it was good. And I mean, I got some great, most people were, and by savage, almost everyone, with maybe one or two exceptions, were super cool about it. Like, you know, I love good discourse, as painful as it is sometimes to, and this is part two of the story. There's definitely some things I moderated later on and kind of had to put a tweet out with a little tail between the legs on some things, because I think I was just wrong in some instances. But it's always good. I love good discourse, but sometimes it's just painful to hear, even though you enjoy it. So diving into my kind of three initial takes, and then Bill, we can go to you. So one, the consumer behavior is shifting thing. I really think Amazon is becoming a place, and I still believe this, where it's a lot of people are buying one of two things on Amazon. Like if you think about, when I think about my recent purchases, they're either like low-end commodity items like batteries, cables, things like that, sub $50 items maybe, or really higher end things from big national brands. Like I just bought a Rode microphone for $400, more of a premium purchase. I knew them, had a great reputation, but like in between, I don't know if I'd go on Amazon to try to shop for like a mid-range microphone, something like that. And I do think that is to some degree happening. I think there's becoming more commodity items on Amazon. It's getting more crowded. It's getting harder to trust or harder to like differentiate what's really good and what's not, especially in that in-between area. Secondly, the off-Amazon brands perform better. I looked at some of the data from, and I tweeted this, I kind of shared this when the report came out, that if you look at the percentage of sellers and the aggregate volume of revenue coming from Amazon over the last couple of years, it's actually dropped, not precipitously, but it's definitely come down after 3 years of increasing. And so, you know, from the sample size from that trends report that you mentioned, Bill, we're starting to see adoption of on Amazon fall off a little bit. And then third was, that was my third point. The migration has already begun. So more and more people are kind of starting to slowly leave it. The second point, which I skipped over, off Amazon brands perform better. I also looked at growth rates of income, revenue, net margins, all those kind of things. And for the most part, the brands that were selling on Amazon were doing worse than the ones that were not selling on Amazon. Anyway, so that was kind of the thesis. And I'll save some of kind of my second take for a minute here. But Bill, but what was, when you read that, like what was your reaction? And maybe I'm guessing you're going to summarize a lot of, you know, what people got real juicy in the comments with me about.
So, I mean, your basic take was, because it's hard to do business on Amazon, brands are going to leave Amazon. And for me, I just fundamentally disagree, honestly. You know, if you had run this back, right, 30 years, right, you could have said all the same things about retail, right? But before e-commerce, right? You know, Kroger is taking more and more margin. They're a pain in the butt to deal with, you know, all that stuff. But like, where else are you going to go? Like you want to sell a consumer product, like you got to be in Kroger, or you know, want to sell a hardware store product, you got to be in Home Depot. It's the same thing. The customers are there on Amazon. And I feel as though as long as the customers are there, the brands will be there, even at lower margins, even at getting taken advantage of by Amazon, all that stuff. If the demand is there, the one thing I know is there will always be someone willing to satisfy it. And I know a lot of brands that, I was just having a conversation with another guy who sells shoes, a great shoe brand, and they kind of have stayed off of Amazon out of pride for a long time. But they're going, geez, the D2C channel, ads are expensive. You know, it's hard to run your own fulfillment. You know, the whole value chain of D2C is complex and expensive and has gotten a lot worse since the Facebook iOS changes. And I think there's a lot of brands actually looking at Amazon now that the D2C channel is much less viable than it's ever been.
Yeah. And so, on that point, that was one of the big things I think I had to walk back. I think my original idea was like, in the next couple of years, we're going to see a lot of brands leave Amazon. And I think it was wrong there. I think in the next couple of years, especially the next year, we will see more brands net go to Amazon because Facebook's harder, because it's just gotten harder to drive traffic, Facebook and otherwise. So I think that is true. And I was totally wrong on that one. But I do think, like you mentioned the Kroger example. So Kroger maybe is a pretty decent example on, if you look at Amazon, Amazon's like, you know, over 50% of e-commerce, right? Like they're dang near as close to a monopoly as you can get when you consider how massive that is. And so they have Kroger, you know, even Kroger with how big they are, I would guess they aren't 50% of grocery. But in most marketplaces, you don't have a distributor, Amazon, a grocery store, someone like that, that has that much power. And this is goes back to the whole antitrust thing. And I, you know, very much in business, you know, I think there's a lot of pros to be said for capitalism, but you have someone with that much power and like the incentives are so strong for them to slowly start squeezing and squeezing and squeezing because if you have that much power, you're going to exercise, you're going to suck all the margin out of it. Like, and Amazon, I think over time is going to really just drive down those, that incremental margin to where it's almost, you know, doesn't make sense for people to sell there in the long, long term. So, that's the thing
I think is, right? That's exactly right. I agree with that. But I don't think what follows from that is that brands will leave Amazon. And I think that's where we differ. Because I agree with you totally. Like, Amazon is a de facto monopoly in e-commerce. You know, like, Standard Oil was a monopoly and they're hiking the price of kerosene. What do people do? Like, they didn't just stop heating and lighting their homes, right? They took it in the teeth. And that's why antitrust regulation exists, right? Because oftentimes there's no alternative to a monopoly. So like, yeah, you can be mad and Amazon can take more and more of your margin, but as long as you are not literally bankrupt, like, where else are you going to go? Like, you don't have any alternatives. That's what I think the beauty of the Amazon ad product is that it creates this kind of perfect competition to see who will give away more of their margin to Amazon, right? Because Amazon can only hike their fees so much until it gets kind of ridiculous and they get a bunch of blowback. But they can just kind of turn loose this ad market and let the sellers compete each other's profits away, paying more for advertising. And that's why I'm very happy to be an Amazon shareholder. But I think why Amazon is getting, you know, harder and harder. And I think you're exactly right. Like, they're pulling more chips towards their side of the table. I just don't know what you're going to do otherwise.
I think a big important part here is the type of brand. Like, there's sellers and then there's real legit brands, right? Like, so if you're a seller on Amazon and you've got, like, private label is really hard, but even if you have a kind of a weaker brand on Amazon, a less differentiated brand on Amazon, I think you're right. I think if you don't have name recognition, if you don't have other channels built up, if you don't have other options, and then you're right. You're probably going to stay there until the end, and then you're just going to shut down shop. So for me, though, a huge part of this take, and I did a bad job communicating this, was I think the brands that have more value than that, that are more differentiated, that have a really strong sense of identity, that are talked about, brands that have more than just, hey, some average packaging and a supply chain. And I think those are the ones, because they will have somewhere else to go. Like, right now on Amazon, I think it does make sense too. This was another part of this multi-channel. Even if you have one of those great brands, it probably makes sense in a lot of instances to go sell on Amazon, particularly if people are already searching on your platform. Like, it's been a multi, you know, a year-long educational process for me. But Bill, we were all sitting in a meeting advising one of the portfolio companies for UCF Capital, an investment we'd made, about if you should go on Amazon. And they asked me, and my original response is, no, you shouldn't. And we had the whole investor group there. And I opened it up. I was like, hey, I know I'm kind of biased here. What do you guys think about this brand selling on Amazon? And the big thing that kept, you know, long story short, people were searching for the brand. There was already active search volume, not just for their product, but for their specific brand that wasn't going met on Amazon. And I very much changed my mind, because I was like, yeah, right now people are searching for it. You don't have to advertise or searching specifically for your product. 100% makes sense to do that. So I think that makes sense for some brands now. But over time, like, as we're talking about, because they're so powerful and because they keep squeezing that out, if you have a good brand, if it's searched other places, and if the headaches and costs continue to increase on Amazon, which I think they will, at some point you just say, this isn't, why are we doing this? Why are we dealing with ripoffs? Why are we dealing with margin that's half of, you know, what it is in other channels? Why are we you know, why are we letting people buy from us here when, if it wasn't here, we have enough demand, they'd probably come buy from us on our website. And I think that's the point. So the big differentiation is stores, yes, I think they'll stay to the bitter end. True brands that have, like, you know, some name recognition and something different, I think they're going to leave Amazon in the long term.
So, all right, I'll disagree with you again, which is what you pay me for. Andrew does not pay me, but it would be great if he did. So you said, you know, why would I be on Amazon if the margin is half of what it is off of Amazon? I frankly just don't think that's true. I mean, I run a 40,000 square foot warehouse here at our business. And we look at channel-based P&Ls, and I look at the contribution margin on our D2C P&L, and then I burden it with our warehouse space, and, you know, the equivalent would be 3PL costs and all that stuff. And I compare that to FBA fees. We make more money on Amazon because Amazon can ship a box way more cheaply than I can ship it. Their real estate's cheaper. They got bigger buildings. It's closer to the end consumers. So their postage is cheaper. You know, their labor is probably cheaper, you know, because it's more efficient. Like, they can do everything better than me. I mean, Amazon's FBA fee on one of our products will be like $4. And that includes postage. I can't even ship it for $4, let alone cardboard and rent and labor and all that stuff. So we actually see better margins. And the other thing that I think is worth mentioning is, you know, you kind of said, if you've got a real brand and ultimately you'll say, hey, you know, let's pull it off of Amazon and people will come to our .com. I mean, that might be true if someone already knows that they want your product. So I think you got to separate kind of what I would call almost branded search or branded intent versus non-branded intent. Like, as you described, like, yeah, that's probably true. Like, if I know I want an Apple iPhone, I know I can go to apple.com and buy one. Or, you know, whatever. If I know I want Natural Dog Company supplements, I can go to naturaldog.com and buy them, to use our brand as an example. But if I know I want dog supplements, right, all the buyers, we know 60% plus of non-branded searches in e-com start in that Amazon search box. So if you're not there, you got no hope. You got no hope to acquire that customer in the first place and then hope to convert them to branded intent on order 2, 3, or 4. So, I mean, I think it always just comes back to, if the customers are searching on Amazon, you as a brand got to be there, even if you're not making a penny, because it's about discovery.
Yeah. And when we were talking, you had a good quote that stuck with me. I think you said something along the lines of like, FBA is like the best app, is the best deal in the history of e-commerce or something like that, you know, in terms of all the reasons you just said. And I can see that, but again, kind of coming back on kind of two different points. First one, if it's a really good deal, if it's that amazing of a deal, to me, that feels like anytime you see an extraordinarily good deal, you're just like, oh, this is so good. This is like, I can't operate. I can, you know, it's for me to try to replicate this is so much more expensive. It's a great deal. To me, that feels like a long-term loss leader, right? So in my mind, those rates almost certainly, without a doubt, have to start coming down on that margin squeeze, because it's, yes, they have larger efficiencies of scale, but more, you know, they know they have the leverage there and those are going to come down. And then, so I think the second thing too is, I think for you and for other brands, I heard this from a handful of people, that it's cheaper to operate on Amazon versus your own fulfillment. And I can definitely buy that. But I think in aggregate, I don't know if that's the case. And so I looked at, again, diving into the state of the merchant survey and realizing that there is some inherent bias in that, especially at an average level, because a lot of the survey respondents come from e-commerce fuel community members, which are, you know, tends to be more D2C. We kind of filter for that. But we also do have a meaningful number of those respondents that are, almost exclusively Amazon. So 80 to 100% Amazon revenue. And so I filtered out that cohort. And then I compared that cohort, so heavy, almost all Amazon, to the zero Amazon. And if it was the case that Amazon would help you be able to build a stronger, leaner, more efficient business on the average, you'd expect the brands that were leveraging Amazon to be having, you know, higher growth, higher profitability, et cetera. And they didn't, you know, they were lagging by quite a big margin. I mean, growing half as quickly, their profit margins were 30% lower, all these things. So I think it works for you. I don't think that works. I just don't buy the idea that like building a business, you know, that Amazon in general is going to help you build a successful business in the long run, with the possible exception of it maybe helps you get more market share in the short to intermediate run. But in terms of long-term health and sustainability, I just don't buy it.
Well, I mean, I would argue, so, you know, I agree in a lot of ways. Like, I would argue that any business that confines itself to one channel is not optimized in the long term, right? If you're only selling at retail and you're not on D2C and you're not on Amazon, right? I think you're leaving a lot of dollars on the table. You know, kind of like I said earlier, you know, Amazon is a red ocean. Like, there's the ad expense. You're like, how much of my margin can I give back to Amazon to get this revenue? Like, it's this perfectly competitive market on every single SERP on Amazon. So I think Amazon is great, incredible as a brand for discovery. Like, if you want to be found, like, that's where all the search volume is. Pay up for the ads, try to rank organically if you can, but you're probably not going to make a ton of margin. That doesn't still mean that FBA is not cheaper, right? But it's because FBA is the loss leader of the ad product, as you're saying. The ad product is what sucks all of your margin away. If you can somehow figure out how to be on Amazon and not spend a penny on ads, you probably do quite well. But if you're slugging it out, you know, with generic stuff on Amazon, spend a lot of money on ads, that's where all your margin goes. So I think for a business that is 100% on Amazon, if they have not made the leap off of Amazon, I could actually buy it. Like, this is probably not a good business. Like, maybe it's a commodified product. Maybe the brand is not strong enough to ever drive traffic branded traffic off of Amazon. So I think it's possible that you could be selecting for essentially worse businesses when you just look at 100% Amazon businesses.
Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at e-commerce fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has three big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archive discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So you can reach out to people. If you're in e-commerce fuel, our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, you know, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, you know, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into to avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us at ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7- or 8-figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year, we'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply and potentially join the community. All right, back to the discussion.
And that's a fair point. I think there's probably some of that in that data as well. But even still, like, the magnitude of the difference is just so stark, it makes me think. I think it's interesting you talk about like the branded and the discovery on Amazon. I can see that on one sense, like in terms of just the raw getting eyeballs in front of your product, getting on there, even if you're making less margin, it's great for discovery. People come back and buy. It's great for market share. Maybe you're going to drive some of that back to your .com potentially. I think one thing though, that looking forward in the future is like when I shop on Amazon for products, the thing that I'm trying to judge is you definitely put some stock into, you know, the photography, the pictures, the copywriting a little bit, but you're also looking at reviews. And I'd be curious to hear your take on this, Bill, because you're closer to this than I am. Reviews for me, you know, the more reviews they are, and this is probably pretty obvious, the much more I trust them. But if something doesn't have like at least high hundreds or low thousands of reviews, I'm very skeptical about it. Maybe this is just kind of trauma from back when reviews were so heavily gamed. And it's been a little while. I think Amazon's probably gotten better at it. But I feel like it's going to be such a big advantage too for incumbents on the platform, given how much people look at reviews. So if you're in those thousands, tens of thousands of reviews, I think you're right. I think it's a huge advantage. If you're kind of middle of the road there, I think that's harder. So what are your thoughts on like reviews in Amazon right now? Like, do you actually think that people trust those? Because I feel like I'm very skeptical and I think a lot of other people are still too.
Yeah. So I think if I could find like, is there a chink in Amazon's armor anywhere, right? And the chink, a chink that was truly threatening to Amazon would have to be on the side of the armor that causes customers to go elsewhere, right? And I think this question of trust is something they have a real problem with. And it's in two places. It's in reviews, kind of as you mentioned, which I'll get to in just a second. And it's also in counterfeits. I mean, there are a number of things that I know are easily counterfeited that I would be afraid to buy on Amazon. You know, like I worry about buying supplements on Amazon. I worry about buying kind of any branded clothing item I would never buy on Amazon because of counterfeit risk, right? And it's because it's not about reviews, because I know as a seller, you know, I know it's about, you know, nefarious overseas sellers slipping counterfeit items into the same stock, right? And no one ever really knows, right? That I think is a huge problem that Amazon has. Now, I don't know what fraction of all goods bought are that counterfeit sensitive, because you know, like if I get counterfeit Duracell batteries, like that was $10, like whatever, I don't really care.
Right.
So I don't know like how big that problem is, but it is definitely a problem. And the other problem you mentioned is reviews. And this, you'll forgive me, maybe my jaded opinion after 10 years of being in e-commerce or more. Do not trust a single star review you see on the internet anywhere, period. And I think everybody listening to this probably understands why. I don't, like, when was the last time, Andrew, I don't even want to say that you bought anything that was below 4 stars. When was the last time you even saw anything on Amazon?
I feel like, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's kind of like the same with Yelp, right? Like 4 stars is the new like 2 stars or 1 star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't even surface it, right? So everything you see, you're splitting hairs between 4.5, 4.6, 4.7, right? Like everything. And there's so many ways to manipulate this. People, not only just buying reviews, but like switching out listings, like finding old products that are not for sale anymore that had great reviews, and then changing all the data to be your product. You know, all kind. That's like, you know, you read the reviews and you're trying to buy like a shirt, and the reviews are like, this television is fantastic. You know, that's what's happened. You know, somebody's changed all the reviews from the TV to the shirt. And there's just so many things. I mean, that's just Amazon, but like off of Amazon too, like there's these review syndication companies like Bazaar Voice. So like, you know, we sell at retail, right? And Bazaar Voice will syndicate all the reviews from our .com to all of our different retail partners' websites, Walmart, Walgreens, et cetera. Well, we moderate the reviews on our website. So what do you think is getting synced to all over the internet, right? So just do not trust a single star review. And I don't know how they fix that because that's not an Amazon problem.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I think it's kind of a commentary on reviews, maybe a little more acute on Amazon, but it's a problem everywhere. But I think like the issue about the counterfeiting and the fraud and things that aren't, like for me, that's such a huge issue that if you look at the growth, like the growth in sellers on Amazon, I don't have the stats in front of me. Bill, spot check me here from a gut level, but I think something like 60%, 70% of all FBA sellers selling into the US are now somewhere overseas. I think a lot of the growth is being driven largely by, you know, people outside the United States. And so you think about that. And when I look at Amazon, I feel like the quality assortment is getting, some of it is good, but I feel like I'm having to look harder to find the good stuff. I feel like I'm more suspicious, especially on the low end, like you said, which is why I think purchases on Amazon are increasingly kind of being bifurcated between the low end stuff and the really high end stuff. Because like an Apple product, like to their credit, Amazon has an amazing return policy. So if you get buy an iPhone, I don't know if you can, but you buy an iPhone on Amazon, it's fake. You probably are going to know them instantly and you feel pretty good it's going to be returned. But there's also a hassle in that, especially for lower product items. And so I don't know. I feel like that is such a huge between the number of people overseas that are starting to ship in that may, I think, are probably, you know, are going to be putting more fraudulent items in there on average, and then just the customer awareness of that. A lot of people, I think, are more suspicious of that. That's a hard, I don't know. I think it's a big chink in the armor.
It is. I mean, like I was in the market for a Bluetooth speaker last month, which is like the quintessential like example of this problem, right?
Yes.
So you type Bluetooth speaker in Amazon, right? All the ads are for this brand DOSS, D-O-S-S. It looks professional. I've never heard of it before. You know, buried on the page is JBL. Okay, that's a legit brand. A totally no-name brand. 2 SKUs from Anker, which, okay, I know them. Kenodi, you know, all these things. Unz, like all these brands, Pile, like all this stuff that I've just never heard of. And it's impossible. What you want to do, you want like a toggle on Amazon that says like, don't show me all the Chinese crap, right? Like, of course, it's all Chinese crap, but some of it has American brands on it, right? It's like, you know, show me the stuff that is like real stuff that is not flash in the pan. The listing will be gone next week and I'll never be able to see it again. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Amazon is honestly even interested in fixing that problem. I think if it were a real problem that impacted, you know, sales velocity on Amazon, they would have fixed it already. I think people just don't care.
I think, so here's the thing though. See, I think that's a very insidious problem that you can ignore for a while until one day you wake up and people are like, there's just so much crap here. I don't know what to do. Because in the short term, you're right. It's people are still going to shop there. In the short term, the incentive is bring in sellers from wherever that are going to spend on Amazon for their fees, for advertising, for listing fees, for FBA, for everything. And
you're going to be fine in the short term, but you really need, like, that's such a problem that once you lose your credibility and once people think like they order one too many, you know, really cheap items that just is way below what they were expecting. And, you know, especially if it's got like a decent, you know, a 4.5 and above review, you start losing that faith. That is really hard to recover from. And then it becomes this death cycle of, well, how do we recover? Well, we bring more people in quickly and we lower our standards to make up for the revenue loss by the legitimate customers. And then just, you just go into the ground. So I think it's one of those, almost like a currency crisis. Like, it's not a problem until it is. And then when it's a problem, it's almost impossible to recover from. And that is kind of what I see coming down the road. And I don't know how long that takes. Maybe that takes 2 or 3 years, maybe I'm way off and it takes 10 years, but I see that as like an existential problem for Amazon. And if they're not serious about solving it, which they're probably not, because even public companies aren't great about long-term planning, maybe especially public companies aren't great about long-term planning, that's the real danger I see.
Yeah. I mean, so, but the thing is, it's so hard. Like, is this personal bias? Like, we've known each other for a long time. I've even psychoanalyzed you with Culture Index. I know that you are, I know you're a detail oriented person. I know you're a research persistent person. I know that quality really matters to you, right? I am a research persistent person as well. I'm going to read all the reviews before I buy something. You know, I want it to be good. Like, things like Buy It for Life appeal to people like you and me. But like, I think we're in the minority and a lot of people just want a $20 USB or a $20 Bluetooth speaker and they don't really care. And they'll use it until it breaks 2 years later and they'll buy another one, you know, because they're just not thinking about it that hard. And all of that's, maybe we're in the minority. I don't know.
And I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. And even I, like, if I'm buying a $20 Bluetooth speaker that I'm going to use for a couple of days, but it's not going to be the centerpiece of my, you know, entertainment in my home, I'm going to go buy it on Amazon too. So, I completely grant you. I think those purchases, those stay on Amazon for a very, very long time. But I think the kind of coming full circle back to my original premise was, if you're on Amazon and your margin is shrinking, let's say 5 years from now, you know, let's imagine a world where your margin on Amazon is a third of what it is, maybe even like 20% of what it is off Amazon, and maybe people are still buying from you on Amazon, but you still have all the hassle and you have to, like, there's a branding issue of, you know, you're kind of swimming among this sea of low quality items and people really have to, like, work hard to dig in. There's a branding perception issue is there as well. Again, this is looking way down the future. I don't know. I agree with you though. I think short term and maybe even permanently, those lower cost items, I think Amazon's great for that. I mean, you got to give Amazon kudos. Who else in the world, if I need, you know, a USB-C connector to be able to record a podcast, that I can buy it for $10 and they'll ship it to me within 2 hours. Like, it boggles the mind. Like, I have a tremendous amount of respect for the infrastructure they've built. I'm just thinking more from a perspective of, like, brands and e-commerce fuel and brands that really care about their quality, that where they're going to want to be in 5 years. And I think it's funny. I think you're right. There's a huge bias here. We have some friends staying with us now for a couple of days and they're much younger than us. They're, you know, they're early 20s. And I was throwing around the idea of doing for ECF Live was getting a bunch of, you know, people that are much younger than myself and people in the community, and just asking them questions like, where are you shopping? Like, are you actually using TikTok for discovery? Or is that just kind of like this narrative that goes around? Like, where do you buy your stuff? And I asked them, you know, last night over drinks, and I was like, where do you shop for stuff? And they're like, you know, we still shop on Amazon for a lot of stuff. And there were like some caveats. Like, there's like, we bought this mattress on Amazon. It was absolute garbage. Wouldn't do that again, but we still go back and buy stuff from there. So yeah, you're right, man. I'm sure there's a huge bias here kind of from our own perspectives on the future of Amazon. I was going to ask you, so I can, man, rant, totally rant here, but what do you think about, have you guys had a lot of success driving off Amazon traffic to your listings at, you know, Elements Brands and Natural Dog? Like, have you been able to get significantly lower CPAs doing it that way versus just depending on Amazon's built-in ad system?
Well, we haven't had a ton of success driving off Amazon traffic to Amazon, but the attribution is not that great either. But we've had a ton of success driving Amazon traffic to our listings. I mean, the ROAS on our Amazon ads is the best ROAS on the internet. You know, it's just so far down the funnel. You know, so what we tend to think of is, you know, if you're, it seems like customers kind of bifurcate, like you're either Amazon shopper or you're not. And if you're already on Amazon, like typing, you know, keywords in our category, your credit card is metaphorically in your hand, right? That's very valuable traffic. So we're going to pay and see good ROAS on those people. If you are just scrolling your Facebook feed, like if your credit card is not metaphorically in your hand, right? If you're somewhere else on Amazon, we find that we have more success driving them to our webpage where we can draw them in with more content, you know, different story, et cetera. Now, that being said, that ROAS is terrible. right? because of Steve Jobs, because of Apple, because of Tim Cook, rather. Like that's what that ROAS is terrible. But what I can't measure is how much of my organic Amazon branded search traffic is from when people come through my Facebook funnel to my website, become convinced to buy, pop open a new tab, and type Natural Dog Company into the box.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think one thing too, kind of stepping back from Amazon, and maybe we should start to wrap this up a little bit, but from my perspective, it was very interesting looking at the two different tweets that I sent. And so the first one I sent, like, again, totally acknowledge this, was pretty spicy, very hard line, very definitive, here's how the world is going to look. And as a marketer, like a lot of, if you're in e-commerce, chances are you're a marketer, you've got some bent towards that. Like you want what you're saying to get attention. Like you want it to be picked up. You want to sell your idea and your narrative. And the way to sell that, and sometimes, you know, I think the temptation is to make it, you know, more hard line one way or the other, which I, you know, definitely did on the first time. And that first tweet, like, got a lot of engagement. Granted, a lot of it was pushing back on me, but it got a lot of engagement. A lot of people saw it. It got a lot of follows. Like a lot, you know, people came over to the community. Like it was from an awareness perspective, it succeeded. But granted, like we talked about here, some of the things that I took hard lines on, I think I was, you know, too aggressive on and had to walk back. So I did another tweet that was like, okay, I think maybe I was wrong in these areas and kind of went back and laid those out. So more of a moderated position, something that I, you know, had more thought, should have put out the first time with some more research before I, you know, shot that first tweet off. A more, I think, genuine, accurate view of the world that was better considered. And, you know, it probably got 10% of the engagement of the original, right? So what's the point being, A, everyone has an agenda when they're putting out content, even if it's subconscious, even if it's not there, you know, they'd say they're writing it, there's a subtle incentive to try to engage things. And B, like, it's kind of, I mean, this isn't a surprise here. We hear all the time about how social media and you know, democracy and the world is getting torn apart by social media going to the edges. But like this, for me, this was kind of a very, like, just a case study and like, wow, it's kind of crazy how much more engagement the stuff that is hardline gets than the stuff that is more moderated, which is kind of scary in terms of a lot of different implications. So
it is. It is. I mean, but you can see it. Anybody who's ever posted social content on social media knows it to be true instinctually, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if you can solve for it. Bill, you want to start a platform that rewards less spicy takes? Is that even possible?
Yeah. No, it's not. No one would like it.
Yeah.
Literally or metaphor.
Oh, man. Cool. Any kind of closing thoughts? This is good. I appreciate the back and forth. And again, you were a big part of kind of helping me kind of rethink some of my thoughts on this. But yeah, any closing thoughts on the Amazon front kind of going forward, or where you think Amazon or e-commerce is kind of how this all looks going forward in the future?
I wrote this in a thread in ECF. I'll say it again here. Any brand that is ignoring Amazon out of pride or for quote unquote brand reasons is leaving a crap load of money on the table, and you should screw your head on and put your products on Amazon.
Yeah. Good final quote. And I think I've come around to agree with that, with the caveat, a big caveat of in the short term, especially if you're getting branded search for your products on there. I think too, probably one of my favorite takeaways from my last quote after giving it, you know, a couple of days of thought was like, if your business completely depends on Amazon economics, or if your business can't exist without Amazon, then I think your business probably is not going to exist in the long term. So a couple of fun takes on it. Bill, I always love debating with you, man. You're super sharp. You keep me intellectually honest here and always an opinion I respect, man. So thanks for coming on and hashing this out. We'll have to do more of this. This is a lot of fun.
I'm happy to disagree with you for free anytime.
Thanks, buddy.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell, and also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.